Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Tyler. I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and I'm so grateful to be here with all of you. And I want to say how much I appreciate the commitment that you guys are doing. I know that you will reap the benefits of it, because sometimes at this place in the work, you kind of go, come on, will step one ever get over? So I get it, you know. And let me just say this to you. We have next week, and then in 4 weeks, we will be in a fourth step. So we have next week is a second half of More About Alcoholism. And then I'll be doing the spiritual malady, the unmanageability. And then we will do We Agnostics in two sessions. And then we will do a third step, and we'll be into a fourth step. So once we get through this first step, especially the physical and the mental, I do think it's a long haul. But, and sometimes I wonder, you know, could they left some of this out? Like, geez Louise, right? There's a lot of step one. We're in step one for 8 weeks. And, you know, when I get to this place, I start thinking that, you know, this is so much. And why did they do it? You know, they talked about in the previous chapter, you know, making sure we have no lurking notions that we will ever be able to drink like other people. And they're going to talk about no reservations here. And I think that if I can see this as the gift of the founders of this program that were us, and every crack, and the idea that when we finish this, to me, right now where we're at in the work, when I'm working with most people, they better know by this point. But they're saying, even if you think you know, you may not know the extent of it. We're going to show you more about alcoholism. We're going to make sure you get it, so you can rest assured that this, you're in the right place, that you really are the real thing, and you don't have to be anymore in your head about it. Am I, aren't I? You know, so I think what they did for us is incredible, and it's a gift. But sometimes when you're in it, it feels like, geez, I want to just get through it. So I wanted to say that. And when, you know, when I look at what we looked at in the beginning of the book, in the foreword, we looked at, you know, going through asking ourselves the questions, is this me? Did this happen to me? Do I believe this? And continuing to go through the work like this, and like we did in the doctor's opinion, to see, do I have that allergy? Because we finished the physical, and we should all be pretty solid in it. We're going to look at a test for the physical craving, but we should all be solid in it, that physically, am I a real alcoholic craving once I put it in my system? Do I lose control? Do I have an allergy, a sensitivity that I can't control the amount? Am I powerless physically? Am I a real alcoholic physically? We should be solid in that at this point, I think, but we will look at a little deeper into a couple of things. And so now we turned on the top of page 23. It ended on the bottom of 22. Does my experience abundantly confirm that once I put any alcohol or dope into my system, that something happens both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for me to stop till I get to that place? And I don't know when that'll be. And I know I've said it before, but it's an important bottom line of the physical craving. And I have to see, is that me? So it says, okay, no problem. Don't pick up a drink. Don't pick up a drug. Can I pull that off? And then they turn me to the mind. Do I have a mind that's nothing in my system? Do I have a mind that's going to take me back to a drink or a drug against anything that I want to happen? That do I, an idea that outweighs all other ideas, why I shouldn't, the mental obsession, does that happen to me? And we're going to go deeper into it. We already went into it in the second half. There is a solution. It says the main problem centers in the mind. The problem is not my mind. And I'm going to go over this and show you how the main problem centers in the mind. When we get into the spiritual malady, it says it centers in the mind only on page 23. The main problem centers in the spirit, and you're going to see that. But when we're on 23, as far as we are in the book, the main problem centers in the mind. But the spiritual malady is the one that contributes to the problem in the mind. So now we're going into more about alcoholism. And last week I asked you, I told you to put up the top of the page 30, power, choice, and control. Power is strength. Choice is more than two reasonable options, and control is ability. I asked you to put that there because if I lose one, I lose all three. How can I, I'm gonna take off my glasses for a minute. If I lost the power, I've lost the control and I have no choice. If I've lost the power, I've lost control and I have no choice. Can I see that? And I'm gonna explain this to you, okay? Power, choice, and control. Well, let me think if I'm gonna wait until I get further down. into the book. I think I'm going to wait till I get a little further down into the book, so that I can explain it where the book talks about it. So let's read together, follow me. And if you have questions, please make notes of them, because I want to answer them. And I may skip a few parts. I want to emphasize more some parts, and I may skip a couple parts, because I really want you guys to have the time to share, because this is a 3-part experience, 4-part experience with the homework, with your step guide, with me or Joe, and then with you. And the group sharing is a very important part. So let's begin on the top of page 30. More about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. Like it or not, I'm a real alcoholic. I had no trouble admitting it. Some of you may have, I had none. To me, knowing I was an alcoholic was the greatest gift in the world, because I never knew what was wrong with me. I had no idea. I never heard of AA in my life. And knowing that I was an alcoholic, I was so glad to understand what was wrong with me. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. My fellows are non-alcoholics. No one likes to think they're bodily and mentally different from non-alcoholics. I didn't mind being bodily and mentally different. I always knew I was different anyway, so that wasn't a problem for me. Therefore, it's not surprising that my drinking career has been characterized by many failed attempts to prove I could drink like other people and not drink like other people. Above drink, put not drink. We're going to talk about my inability to control my not drinking and my inability to control my drinking. Because it says there that to prove that I could drink and not drink like other people are non-alcoholics. Okay. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my drinking. I'm sorry. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control. Someday is now. Someday is not in the future. Some days now, I will control and enjoy my drinking and not drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. It's a great obsession of mine. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing, okay? They're gonna use 3 words in on this page. They're gonna use the word illusion, obsession, and delusion. And an illusion is like a magician. You know, when you see a magician, what they're showing you is not really what's going on. The rabbit is not really coming out of the hat. Well, what I see out here in my drinking is not really what's going on. I think I'm controlling it, but I am not. I create illusions. And obsession is an idea that outweighs all other ideas why it shouldn't. An idea that comes to mind, and sometimes it doesn't, but I'm convinced that I can drink. So an obsession is an idea that comes to mind that outweighs all other ideas why I shouldn't. And a delusion is the way I lie to myself on the inside. I create delusions on the inside. That's the way I lie to myself. So this says the persistence of the illusion of this, the persistence of this illusion, what illusion? I'll control and enjoy my drinking is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Sober. I can be sober thinking that I have the power to control my not drinking and live like a non-alcoholic and end up in the gates of insanity or death, because many people end up blowing their brains out in this program that don't work a strong program. So for me to say, when I see someone and they're saying they're an alcoholic, but they don't do 10 and 11, they haven't finished their 8-step list, they're not working with others, they're not doing prayer and meditation. Well, obviously they're living at trying to control their not drinking like other people, like non-alcoholics. Because to me, if I say I'm a real alcoholic, then the behavior of my spiritual practices should reflect that. And mine do. Because I know that my life depends on it. And I know that I've done it long enough that I wouldn't miss it for the world. Okay. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. And I asked you guys on this week home to fully concede to your innermost selves. They say that's the first step in recovery, not on the wall, but to concede. And I concede to my innermost self right where God is, that I'm a real alcoholic. And conceding means reluctantly. And if you didn't see it and you didn't concede, that's okay too. But if you did, then I hope that you took your time in prayer to concede between you and God, you and your higher power, that you're a real alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion, the way I lie to myself, the delusion that I am like other people, non-alcoholics, or presently maybe has to be smashed. Presently maybe has to be smashed is today. And this is such an important sentence because for me, it talks to me no matter how much time I have. It tells me if I have 3 months or I have 30 years, I will never be like other people. And I have to look at that. I will never be able to carry resentment like my brother can. I'll never be able to hang on to unforgiveness. I will not be able to live, I believe, without spiritual practices. I will not be able to hate like some people can hate, nor do I want to, but I won't be able to. I won't be able to do some things that other people won't do. The idea that I'm like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. They didn't have to say presently maybe. They could just say the delusion that I'm like other people. They didn't, what they said, or presently maybe, because they mean ever. Today, whenever you're reading this book, you will not be like other people. I will not be like other people. And for me, it's very freeing because I need to know that I need to understand the things that I need to do to be able to live a happy, joyous, and free life as an alcoholic and addict. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. The amount I take or staying stopped. We know that no real alcoholic ever squiggly lines like a neon sign, beep, 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 circle it. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers choice. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers power, okay? Now let's look at power, choice, and control. So let's look at choice. Because you hear it in the rooms, I just wake up and choose not to drink. Well, if you're staying sober by that mental obsession, first of all, you may not be a real alcoholic. And if you are a real alcoholic, you're a real alcoholic in the denial of the grace of God. Because I could not stay sober choosing, not based on what I've learned in the big book. So let's look at choice. More than two reasonable options. As an alcoholic, my two reasonable options are to drink or not drink. Okay. So look back when you were in your disease. I look back when I was in my disease. Could I wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to choose not to drink until 6 o'clock and pull that off? Could I say, I'm going to choose not to drink today and pull that off? I'm going to choose not to buy any cocaine this afternoon. Maybe once in a while I could, but I could never predict when I could pull it off or when I couldn't pull it off. So it was not for me waking up and saying, today I choose not to drink. And I could, maybe I pulled off that day. Could I pull it off the next day? Could I pull it off the following week? No, I could not wake up and say, I choose not to drink or use and pull that off. So I have to say that not drinking or using is not a reasonable option for me. So if that's not a reasonable option, how can I say that drinking is a choice? Because I don't have two reasonable options. So there has to be more involved than choice. So if I lose one, I lose all three. Okay. I hope that you guys understand that. And if you don't, you can always call me on the phone and I'll go over it with you because it took me time to understand it. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control. All of us felt at times we were regaining choice. I felt at times I was regaining power, but it wasn't true. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, doing things I promised myself I would never do. I promised myself I would never do prostitution. I would never steal. I would never write bad checks, lots of things. And the next week I find myself doing it. Do you see that in your own lives? Okay. Am I convinced to a man that an alcoholic and addict of my type are in the grip of a progressive illness, a progressive fatal illness? Do I believe that? And you know what? I look at the people that relapse. See, my disease and our disease of alcoholism and addiction is progressive whether I'm drinking or not. I don't have to be drinking for it to progress. If I pick up a drink today, it would just be like, I would be the same as I was 31 years ago. It is progressive, okay? But we look at, let's look at the chronic, let's look at relapsers that go out and relapse. It's a progressive disease. Over any time, it gets worse, never better. How many times have you been in a meeting and someone's relapsed and they come in and tell you how great it was? I haven't seen it. I haven't heard it. So I look at it. I've never seen anyone come in and say, oh my God, it was so great. But probably if it was, we wouldn't see them, right? Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Untreated, I get worse, never better over any period of time, whether I'm drinking or not. I am like a man who has lost their legs. I never, never, circle never, grow new ones. The losing of my legs is losing power, choice, and control. That's what I lose, power, choice, and control. I have no legs. The man on the couch, he has no legs. Can he get off the couch and choose to walk to the door? No. Can he get off the couch? Does he have the power to get off the couch and walk to the door? Does he have the ability, the control to get off the couch and walk to the door? No. But two guys could come in and pick him up and carry him, and that would be a power greater than himself. Am I like the man that lost his legs? I'll never grow new ones. I will never regain power, choice, or control. I need to know that in my innermost self. And I think that's one of the important things that I concede to in on that page, that that is not going to come back. Because I think it's that that can always sneak in. And we're going to see that later on in the chapter, okay? Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men, like non-alcoholics. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, we have been seen brief recovery, followed always by still a worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. No, there's no thing of make there. You can't make an alcoholic into a non-alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Do I believe I'm a real alcoholic yet? Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are going to believe they're not in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they are going to try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule. Therefore, non-alcoholics. If anyone is showing inability to control his drinking or not drinking, can do the right about face and drink like a non-alcoholic, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we've tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people, non-alcoholics. Okay, this paragraph is going to give me some of the things that I do. So I like to read this paragraph with people I work with, and I did it with Kimberly and with Mariana this week. Why didn't drinking beer only work? Craving obsession. Why didn't never having it in the house work? Craving obsession. Why didn't switching from scotch to brandy work? Craving obsession. Why didn't agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job work? Craving obsession. Why didn't reading inspirational books work? Craving obsession. I'm not going to read all. We could increase the list ad infinitum. Do I have any more controlled drinking or not drinking to do to be convinced that I'm a real alcoholic? You know, they're going to give me two tests. And the two tests, one is for physical craving, one is for mental obsession. And these two tests are not in the book until 31 and 33. So when people come into the rooms and people say to them, you know, oh, you're just not done. Go back out and try some more drinking to get done. That's what shouldn't be said to them until you've taken them all the way through the big book to these pages to where they recommend it so that they can get a full understanding. Because many times what they will tell you in the beginning of a meeting when they're relatively new is a lie. They're so messed up, they don't even know what they experienced. And when you begin to take them through the work, you begin to see stuff that they never would have told you. Because I do the alcoholic addict interview before I'm going to work with someone or I'm going to connect them with a sponsor, which I do at BBA. So when I do that, I've done it long enough, and you guys have done it long enough to see that what they tell you may not necessarily be the truth, because they don't even know the truth from the false, as the doctor said in the doctor's opinion. So now they're going to give us the test for the physical craving. Okay. And this test was Marty Mann's test, who was the first woman in Alcoholics Anonymous that had any amount of time. And she worked for the foundation or whatever you call it on alcoholism. And this was her test. And this is two drinks a day. Well, she says you can choose 1 to 3 drinks, but typically two drinks a day for 6 months. They think they say in here 30 days. For 6 months, same drinks, same time to see if you lose control. Now, I think it's a good meditation for you to consider if you could do that. If you're sitting here sober right now and you think you could do two drinks a day, same time, same drinks, like let's say you say, okay, wine, two glasses of wine, 6 o'clock every day, no more, no less. You can't have one glass. You can only have two glasses. No more, no less. Do you think you could do that for 30 days and not lose control, let alone 6 months? Does anyone here think they could do it? Okay, on the top of page 32, it says, oh, let me read that thing. We do not like to pronounce any individual an alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself, step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide. If you're honest with yourself about it, it may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of your condition. And that's a great consideration. And you know, you can consider this without having to go out and do it. Could you do that? I know I could never do it. And I don't know when I would lose control, but I'm sure I would lose control in the first couple of days. A normal drinker would not be terrified about this experiment. They would be rest assured they could do it. I know I could not do it. Though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is still power. We have heard of few instances where people who show definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. You know, when I was designing clothes, I designed clothes for 18 years in LA and overseas. I had a great career that, you know, I lost behind drinking and using. And I was designing with a gal, and I don't think I shared this, but if I did, I'm going to share it again. I was designing with a gal. I handled one department. She handled the other department, and we would party after work together, do cocaine, drink, get drunk, and party, right? And we did it for, you know, months. And after a few months of doing it, I was at her house, and her name was Fran, and she said to me, I had cocaine and we had alcohol, and she said, you know, Tyler, I just can't do this anymore. And I thought, what can't she do? I'm sure she's not talking about drinking and using, right? She goes, I can't drink anymore and I can't use drugs anymore. I got to tell you guys, I was astonished. I couldn't believe that she was just like that was going to quit. And she did. And you know what? She wasn't my friend anymore because I didn't hang out with people that didn't party like I partied. And you know what? I always look back on that and see that her reason to quit was internal. It was within herself. She didn't like what it was doing to her. And I could have never done that. And I never even really wanted to look at what it was doing to me because I knew that I couldn't live without it. Okay. Now they're going to give us some examples that have some lessons for us. So see if you can also see some of the lessons and some of the experiences are important. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. Can I control, in a spree drinker, can I control the start? And can I control the stop? And do I know if you're a periodic drinker, do you know when it will start and when it will stop? Because most times don't. And I was a periodic for a long time. He was very nervous. I put restless, irritable, discontent, put RID above very nervous, spiritual malady, in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business. Did that keep him from picking up again? His desire to be successful, but saw he would get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. Okay, so what, I call this guy Mr. Carpet Slippers. So what did Mr. Carpet Slippers have? Did he have the physical craving? Did he have the mental obsession? He only had one. And that's why he could stop. It is a progressive illness, and many people start out with only having one, and eventually they progress into having both. He only had the physical craving. Remember, he said where it says, once he started, he had no control over that, but craving, whatever. And it says that he would wake up in the morning and he had to quiet himself with more alcohol because you can wake up in the morning and still have the physical craving because alcohol is still in your system. So he says here that he made up his mind. He made up his mind because he did not have the mental obsession yet. but he did have the physical craving. He made up his mind, and an exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink like other men, like non-alcoholics. This belief is so haunting. I'm going to tell you, this belief will haunt you. You may not even know it. This idea that after a long period of sobriety that I can drink like other people takes a lot of people out. And I think when you work a strong program and you're continually to go back through the 12 steps every year or two, that this to me has been a real assurance. But don't think I haven't had that idea. I mean, there's a couple times Joe knows that I've said, you know what, I've had enough of this. I am moving to the Bahamas. I'm going to smoke dope the rest of my life and just chill out. This is just too serious, right? But Rick knows, right? And you know, I've thought of that. I mean, it's fleeting, but I've thought of it. You know, but I didn't think that I could control my marijuana, because I never, you know, lost control of marijuana. It's just not that kind of drug for me. I just thought I'd just chill out, you know, and go there. But this idea that after a long period of sobriety, and this long period of sobriety for some people can be 3 months, for some people can be 1 year, right? That maybe that idea, that's why it was so important when these guys I worked with, Mark and these guys, that they were saying doing all 12 steps, they were doing it every year. And I did it every year for years. Now I do it every other year. So that Mark used to say that my first step cannot be a distant memory. And so this first step needs to be alive in my life, so that these kinds of ideas, these delusions, these crazy things that come to my mind get smashed. Am I a real alcoholic? Okay. In 2 months, this is Mr. Carpet Slippers. He's ready now. He's had 25 years. He's successful. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. Did being in a hospital, being puzzled and humiliated, stop him from drinking? He tried to regulate his drinking and not drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then gathering all his forces, all his power, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. All the power that he has and all the power that you have on your own, your self-will and your willpower, is everything that I have minus God. Everything I have on my own, okay? Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Did his human powers, his mental defense of sobriety, time, self-discipline, hospitalization, the best of his ability, being puzzled and humiliated, stop him from drinking? Let's see. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. He had the mental obsession. By that time, the mental obsession had come on him. Most of us have believed that if I remained sober for a long stretch, for a long period, I could thereafter drink like other people. But here is the man who at 55 found he was just where he'd left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in short time as bad as ever. If I am planning to stop drinking, are you guys planning to stop drinking? Am I, say to myself, am I planning to stay stopped? Yes, I am not planning to drink. So if I am planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservations of any kind. Somehow I will be immune to alcohol. So I say to myself, I ask, any reservations? Is there anything in your past or any ideas that you have that you may be able to drink like other people or use like other people someday? But I also talk to the people I work with about future reservations. I've worked with enough people through the years to know that I have seen people relapse and come back and said to me, you know, Tyla, I always told myself if my partner, if my husband got terminally ill, I would drink. I always said if something happened to my child, I would drink. I always said if I got cancer, I would drink. Well, I go over it, and Mariana, who's on the line, and Kimberly can tell you that I went deeply over that with them about their parents, about Mariana's son. What is your commitment to staying sober? My commitment is, no matter what, I am never going to I'm going to honor everyone in my life by being sober because I have quit drinking for good and all, just like Dr. Bob said. I may live emotionally one day at a time, but I have quit drinking for good and all. But these are important commitments to talk to the people you sponsor about, because I'm telling you, so many times people have come back and said, you know, Tyler, my husband just got diagnosed with terminal cancer. Had you not talked to me about the commitment, right, Wendy, the commitment to stay through it sober, that was my commitment, I don't know that I would have. And you know what? It's very helpful. I can't tell you enough. And I hope that you'll ask yourself these questions, because these are important questions. Because that stupid reservation that I can have in the future about if I get cancer, if my partner gets cancer, if my son dies in a car accident, those things can chew away at me, and they can, I can be drinking in a month. You know what I mean? Those things can be little termites that eat away at the foundation of my recovery. Okay, here we go. This is a paragraph on young people. I'm only going to read part of it. Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think they can stop, as he did, on their own willpower. All the power that I have minus God. We doubt if many of them can do it, because none of them will really want to stop, and hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. The peculiar mental twist is this. My mental twist is the delusion of having the ability to stop when I want to. I'm going to say that again. My mental twist is the delusion of having the ability to stop when I want to. I used to always tell people when I was drinking and using at the end, you know, and I was on the streets doing prostitution, and people would tell me all the time, Tyler, excuse me, you're out of control. You know what? You got to slow down. You got to do this. And I would just tell him, you know what? I could quit if I wanted to. I could never quit if I wanted to. But you know what? I bought the lie. I believed it. Okay. I'm going to go over to the next page. Turn over to the next page. Turn on the top of page 34. Here's the second test. Excuse me. This is the test for the mental obsession. If someone comes to me in a meeting and I'm talking to them, and they're not sure they're an alcoholic, and even if they've been around 3 months or whatever it is, and they're not sure, and they're not sure that they want to do, and I always talk to them about the physical craving and the mental obsession, seeing how it shows up in their body, and they say to me, you know what, I really think I can stay stopped. I tell them, go see if you can stop for 3 months, 6 months, a year on your own power, not doing a program. Go see. They need to get a full understanding, a full knowledge of their condition. And, you know, when you think about it, like Helen, when you think about it, put yourself back in when you were in your disease and someone would say to you, okay, can you stay stopped for anything like a year on your own power? I mean, it just takes my breath away. No way in hell could I. But you know what? It can help someone get a full understanding of their condition. And it's a good meditation, you know, even if you don't do it. But they're not talking about stopping for a year in the program. They're saying stopping without a program. Okay. So I'm going to go down to the next paragraph. For those, I hope that you put on the bottom of page 31, the test for physical craving, and next to this one, the test for the mental obsession. Okay. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Well, do you want to stop altogether? I want to stay stopped altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. And when I stay and stay stopped, when I work with people, I ask them, do you desire to stay stopped? And do you want to stop? Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose. Now, this can get really confusing for us, because I have to know my truth. My truth is I have no power to choose. I have no ability. I have no strength. I have to know my truth. Okay. So, because it does say on the top of 24, most people, doesn't mean every single one. Okay. Whether he will drink or not, whether he's lost the power to choose, whether he'll drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever. Could I cease forever? No. Yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. So, how then shall we help our readers determine to their satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render even greater service to the alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical community, fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede, circle and underline precede, a relapse into drinking or drugging, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. Insanity, the insanity that happens to me when I'm under the influence, I have to fix this, the light. The insanity that happens to me when I'm under the influence is a result of drinking and using. All the things I do when I'm loaded, all the crazy stuff I did, smuggling drugs between India and Thailand. I did such crazy stuff. What was I thinking, right? I wasn't. But that was insanity. But when did the insanity occur? The insanity is not what I do as a result of drinking and using. Insanity is what happens before I pick up, based on everything that has happened to me under the influence. The insanity precedes. They take me out from my biggest excuse of all of why I do crazy things, right? Because I was loaded. I did so many crazy things loaded, right? But they take me out from behind the bottle. They're going to take me out from behind my biggest excuse of all. Tyler, sober, cold sober. Insanity hits and I'm off and running. Okay, here we go. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Insanity is having an unsound mind. Displaying bad judgment, an unsound mind, showing bad judgment. That's insanity. You're going to have a few definitions, but that's one of them. The desperate experiment of the first drink. Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which have brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. And I say to people when I'm working with them, we got to bring this alive to them. What have your friends said, right? What have your friends said about your drinking and using? I mean, how many friends have I lost because I partied too hard? They were sick of it. They were sick of watching me die. You know what I mean? I just got new friends. I just said, forget them. But the problem was, is that I was so out of control, but I didn't know it. And I couldn't admit it. I knew it, but I couldn't admit it. Okay. Now, why does he, of what is he thinking? Let's see what someone like this is thinking. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. Find yourself in Jim's story. This man has, let's look at what he has. Number one, you can mark number one. He has a charming wife, right? Number two, he has a family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency, number three. Number four, he had a commendable world record. Number five, he's a good salesman. Number six, everybody likes him. Number seven, he's an intelligent man, normal as far as we can see, except for a nervous condition. Oh, spiritual malady, restless, irritable discontent. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. Your life can be normal in every way, and you can still be a chronic alcoholic. My life is not normal in any way. I mean, not normal even when I was at the height of designing clothes, because I just had very strange ideas. So here he is. In a few years, he became so violent and intoxicated, he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. So he came in contact with some alcoholics, right? We told him what we knew of alcoholism, step one, and the answer we had found, step two. So I asked myself, do I know about alcoholism? Have I found the answer in step two? Did I make a beginning in step three? He made a beginning in step three. Here's what happened. His family was reassembled. And he began to work as a salesman for a business he had lost through drinking. I get a resentment just thinking about it. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. So I say to myself, and all you need to say to yourself, have I failed to enlarge my spiritual life? Have I failed to finish that 9-step amends and that 8-step list? Have I failed to practice 10 and 11? Look at your practices. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. Relapse over succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic and in serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family with whom he had deep affection. Okay, he's got the threat. Sufficient reason. He's got sufficient reason, and he's got the threat of loss. Let's see, because it says on page 24, that the consciousness of a week or month, and the things that happen won't even come into my consciousness, right? That I can't pull those memories up and have any power to do anything about it, okay? So he's got a lot to lose, this guy. But then I say to you too, and I want you to see this. People will call me and say to me, you know, Tyler, someone I'm sponsoring relapsed three times. Someone I'm sponsoring, this is their third relapse, their fourth relapse. Shut up. What do? You send them to this page right here. Jim relapsed six times, and they worked with him every time, and they reviewed what he did. They did not take these people back to step one over and over, because what we're saying to them is that knowledge of step one is going to keep them sober. Now, if they relapse, if their last time through step one was 6 months ago, yes, or a year ago, yes, take them. But if they've been relapsing, let's say that, you know, I'm working with someone, and I've got him into the end of a four step, and they've had two relapses, and they relapse again in a four step. I'm not taking them back to step one. They need power. I'm taking them through the steps. I'm going to review what happened and see what we can see and learn about it and what they can learn, but I'm not taking them back to step one. That is giving them the wrong message. Self-knowledge will not help me. And I'm adamant about that. And I do what they did with Jim six times. Yet he got drunk again. Oh, no surprise there. We asked him to tell us exactly what happened. This is his story. I came to work on a Tuesday morning. I remember, I felt irritated, restless, irritable, discontent, spiritual malady. I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Oh, you know what he went in. He went to the boss, listen, asshole, if I wasn't an alcoholic, you wouldn't own this business. And you're just lucky I'm alcoholic. And I don't even know how I friggin' put up with you. That's what he told him, okay? Okay, now I'm going to ask you a question. Have I ever felt restless, irritable, and discontent about my work and drank? Have I ever been upset about my work and drank? Have I ever felt happy about my work and drank? Do you understand what I'm doing? I'm trying to show you that every statement that you make about why you think you drank or didn't drink, you need to give yourself the opposite. You need to show yourself that in the long run, you're going to find out that my external circumstances have nothing to do why I drink. Okay. Then I decided to drive into the country to see one of my prospects for a car. This is how they sold cars in 1938, 39. They sold cars by doing this. One of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry. So I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. I had no intention of drinking. Have I had no intention of drinking and drank? Have you, Helen? Have you, Rick? Have I had intention and drank even when I didn't want to? There's the opposite. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I'd been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at the table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still, no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Have I had a drink when I had no thought of drinking? Have I had a drink when I had a thought of drinking and didn't want to drink? Suddenly, okay, what hits us suddenly? Insanity. Insanity hits suddenly. The lie. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, there's the lie. Put it over ounce of whiskey in my milk. He bought the lie. He told himself a lie and he bought it. It couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. Sanity comes vaguely. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but I felt reassured. See, the physical cravings kicking in, but I felt reassured of taking the whiskey on a full stomach. Oh, another lie, full stomach. He bought the lie. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into my more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I ordered another. How many times I've been at a bar, I've been drinking, I've been using, and I think I'm at the third, sixth, whatever drink it is, like a crazy woman, and I'm thinking, it doesn't bother me. And you know what? I wouldn't know if it bothered me. I'm so numbed and out of it. But I would tell myself, this didn't bother me, so let's have another. One time, I lined up 13 tequila gold shooters on a bar. I lined them. It was in Del Mar years and years ago. I lined them up and I was carried out. I was carried out. I don't even know where I stopped. I just started, you know, I did crazy things, alcoholic craziness. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Here was, I want you to mark this. Number one, the threat of commitment. Mark it. Number two, the loss of the family. Number three, position. To say nothing of the intense mental. Number four, the intense mental and physical suffering. And intense mental suffering is four. Physical suffering is five, which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself. Number six, as an alcoholic, all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea. I just want to read you one thing. I have a lot of notes, but I want to read you just one thing on my notes, okay? Do I see that, like Jim, the following did not and will not keep me from taking the first drink? Go back in your history. Being clinically treated for alcoholism or addiction, meeting with AA members, going through the first three or four steps, my family and profession doing good, the memory of doing bad things, having the sound, reasonable fear of going back to an institution, losing my defenses will not keep me from the first drink, but all of them together will not keep me from the first drink. Okay. Yet all reasons for not drinking or using were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea, put over foolish idea, insane idea that I could take whiskey if I only mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? I can't do with drinking like I can with a hot stove. I do not learn. I cannot. Something in my mind is missing. I can wake up in the morning and say, today I choose not to drink. And then another idea comes in and I start drinking anyway. I can't put the consequences of my drinking to picking up a drink. I can't think straight. I can't get myself from A to B. So that's where we stopped in the first half. And thank you for letting me share. I'm so glad we have time for you guys to share. It's open for sharing. I may call in a couple people, but also if you haven't shared, I hope that you would share on the meeting. And Natasha, would you like to share?
Sure. Thanks, Tyla. Hi, I'm Natasha. I'm an alcoholic. There's just so much good stuff here. I was a little nervous to share because I'm like, how do I can make it concise, but it doesn't have to be concise. It's just my experience with this work and
your experience, just what touched you and what your experience is.
Yeah. And your representation of it was beautiful. And I always get so much. Yeah. I mean, I get new stuff and then those questions, I'm like, I can control it. And then I'm like, wait, shit, that means I'm still delusional. And I'm like, and I need God to smash these delusions.
Right.
So I'm in a process, you know, I'm in the steps. And then my brain is thinking, I'm like, well, one drink. I'm like, well, if it's 8 p.m. and then if it's, you know, I might be out doing something. So then I'd have to make it 9 p.m. I was like, I better just make it one drink then. And this is like, while you're talking, I'm like contemplating this. So anyways, it's a really good meditation for another time too. But these are great questions. Like to ask myself, like, do I think that? I was like, then what about, you know, the preceding chapters that I just learned about the physical craving, it doesn't match up, you know, like when I question these delusions that I have in my mind, they sound good in theory. I mean, to a delusional alcoholic, not real good in real life to someone who's sane, but I'm completely forgetting about, you know, this other component here, like that we're not looking at right now, but we just spent a few weeks looking at it, which is the physical craving. It's like, okay, well, I just went over that. And yes, I have experienced that countless times. Except for like that one time I want to remember that it didn't happen, probably because something was preventing me, which it was. And so it's just so good. And I think I really like the emphasis on the delusion, like the, let me get back to the first page where it's obsession, illusion, and delusion. And I love that the biggest delusion is that I know when I'm going to go out, like I'll be able to predict it, you know, like how like I would be able to know that at 17 and three quarter years on this day, I was going to relapse, you know, like who, like, or that, you know, in sobriety now that I have 5 months, like that I'm going to know when the time and place mm-hmm. is going to come. I mean, even if I'm working a program, back then my program was very not balanced, non-existent. So it's just going forward, like even working my program, I could still have a mental blank spot, which I did experience those numerous times when I was working a solid program. And what happened was God was there. And it was like that thought was just like an instant thought it. And then like the action was sane and sober, you know, but without, you know, knowing when that time and place is going to come, I always need to be armed with the power of God. And what I was thinking about the delusion is that I wasn't, you know, actively obsessing in my mind, like, oh, I'm so uncomfortable. I haven't been working a program. This job sucks. I'm in this toxic situation and I'm being dishonest. It wasn't like that thought train was happening. And I was like, I really need a drink, or I felt like I was living like I needed a drink. It was more these delusions that the subtle foe came in like a different way. And it was a delusion that, oh, I can handle pain meds. I don't need to call my sponsor. I can handle this dating stuff that I'm doing. I don't really need to run this by anybody. And like handling pain meds as an alcoholic of my variety, that was the delusion, you know? So I mean, not maintaining that connection to God, you know, the delusion took me. And then the physical craving took me. So it's like a very clear representation of this process in my story. And just the insanity was like, I'm gonna, like I could take this Valium.
That's right.
I'm not going to the dentist because it's my prescription. And the thought process was, it's not a relapse, but it clearly is. Who takes Valium on a day? Out of the blue when you're a recovered alcoholic. I do if I'm relapsing, but someone in recovery does it. So yeah, just didn't line up. So I'm really grateful for this work. And thank God, you know, there's a solution to restore me to sanity. Thanks.
Thanks, Natasha. You know, when you were sharing, I don't know if anyone else saw it, but you could see when Natasha was sharing, because her experience is so recent, you could see where she bought the lie. Right, Vanessa, you could see where, and you know, it was so clear. And I know you see it now, Natasha, and I'm so grateful you're so open to share all of it, because, you know, you went through a lot and I went through with you. And I'm so glad that you're here in the program you're working. Fernando, would you like to share, honey? Fernando, right here in front of me, or I don't know, this Fernando. Fernando, that's solo. Hi, Fernando.
This Fernando?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Fernando. I'm an alcoholic and a cocaine addict.
Fernando G.
Fernando G, yes. Okay, I want to serve. Or this Fernando or the other Fernando. Anyways, Natasha, thank you for sharing what you shared. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I relapsed after 16 years. And you know what? I believe the lie that, you know what? That I can start selling dope again in sobriety, make money, and then just take out a little bit and sell a little bit more on the side and then start gumming it. And I believed the lie that I wasn't relapsing. And then I believed the lie that having a vasectomy and having three refills over and over and over of Vicodin, I believed the lie that I was in pain. But it was just, I believed the lie once again. And you know, by listening to what you said and what Tyler, how you broke it down, oh my God, Jim's story. You know, I had the charming wife, I had the family, pretty decent salesman, but then again, the restless, irritable, and discontentedness, that spiritual malady, which I never saw before. I just thought, you know what, it'll pass. This too shall pass. And by learning more and more, God, I'm seeing myself more and more in this first step. Experience, it's really happening like right here and right now. And that's what I have to remember is, you know, I just have to try to transform myself into that first step experience and try to stay here like it's happening right here and right now, like I'm just leaving the recovery center, I'm just leaving the meeting, it's all happening right now. And you know, that's, I can relate to what like everybody's like Natasha saying, because that's just like right here, right now. I don't, you know, progressive, yes, I know it is very progressive, because like you were talking about, after 16 years, I picked up and it was worse than ever. The physical part and the mental part was just like, oh my God, I just started believing everything they were telling me. And they were all in my head. You know, the chatter of 1,000 monkeys, all in my head. Thank you.
Thank you. Mariana, would you like to share, honey?
Thanks, Tyler. Thanks for tonight. It's wonderful. I love it. I'm Mariana, and I'm an alcoholic and food addict. And
can you talk a little louder, honey?
I just love tonight, and I love what I'm learning, and I love that I thought I knew what was in the book, and actually it feels like I'm having a brand new experience by going through the work that we're doing. And I love thinking that if I'm not practicing this program and not practicing the book, what's in the big book, then I think I'm a non-alcoholic. So if I'm not doing any of the state work, or I'm not taking that to God, or I'm not praying and meditating, I think I'm a non-alcoholic. And I just, wow, gee whiz, that's so mind-blowing. Having all that I have in my life, but still being restless, irritable, and discontent, and seeing that I'm still full of this spiritual malady. And so I just love what I'm learning, and love that I'm learning with everybody else here tonight. So thanks.
Thank you so much. Vanessa, would you like to share?
Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
Thank you so much, Tyler. It's always just incredible. I have a question, but I'm not sure. I was going to just call you about it, but I'll put it out
there. You can ask it.
I guess I was thinking about phrasing it like, when you're working with someone that has some time, but I'm really talking about myself. It's like
either way, joke. Either way, it's okay.
My friend wants to know.
No, it's okay, because one of the things about being in this workshop is also I want to share my experience and with people. When I take through one-on-one, I'm teaching them how to sponsor as I'm taking them through, and I hope I'm sharing my experience with sponsorship where I see it in the book, because I learn from other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I was wondering this time through, I was finding that I was having trouble sometimes answering the question in terms of, you know, like, do I believe I will ever regain control? No, I believe I find a connection to a higher power, and that relationship mm-hmm. will relieve me, help, I will recover from hopelessness. And you know, things like
to read that question again, because what I think you're saying is I have a hard time answering the questions being I have so much sobriety.
Yeah, like there were just questions where I was like, wait, am I supposed to answer this question as like how I would have answered it like on day one, or am I answering it who I am today now? Do you know what I mean? So, and
yes, you can do both.
Okay. Because I can also put in other things, you know, like I can think about areas of irritation where maybe I haven't like fully conceded to God, you know, my sister needing a bigger apartment. I don't know, something silly, you know, like something, but like that I'm getting in someone else's business about, or something like of that nature, you know, or maybe just my own, you know, how I'm not doing self-care, or like getting enough sleep or something of that, you know, like that. Like I can look at other areas where I'm taking control. Like I need to get all this stuff done and I'm taking control and I'm not giving that to God, right? But it's not, but my drinking has been I've been relieved of that, right? So it's, I'm just wondering, like when you've gone through
something. Yeah, but I haven't been relieved of alcoholism.
No,
I'm not drinking.
But when these questions are directly about the drinking and using, and you've done them many times before, do you encourage?
Have you done what?
And you've gone through BBA many times before. Do you encourage?
I write in there sober. I answer a lot of them sober.
Okay, so you would encourage to answer more.
Yeah, if you saw my big book, and people know that on the line that I sponsor, I write sober in my big book.
Okay.
So that my in places that my big book, let me see where where, because I want my big book to talk to me sober. Does that make sense?
Yes. That's what
so,
And I want
to. So it says, you know, the delusion that I'm like other people or presently maybe has to be fast, sober.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I'll write sober and I'll tell you more times as we go through the book where I've written it, because it really helps for the book to speak to me now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And that's exactly what I'm kind of, I think I'm looking for that. I was getting a little frustrated.
So you can say when you were, the question you read, you can say, well, if I've lost what I think you said something about choice or I've lost this, does my program now sober reflect that?
Okay.
You know what I mean? You'll get in the way and you'll be able to move it into that because you know the work well. And you know what I mean? And you could, I was almost thinking of doing a questionnaire for people with over 5 years.
Oh my God. I would love for you to do that.
I know. Because Natasha would help me. She knows. Anyway, who would like to share? I want to open it up for sharing. Would anyone like to share?
My name's Dee and I'm not Holly.
Wait, well, first Dee, and then we'll get the next one. Hi, Dee.
Marie. Hi, I'm so excited today. I'm really excited about Jim's story. Jim's story is actually one of my favorite stories, and I'm so grateful that the enthusiasm you brought to Jim's story. I loved it. I even have a shirt with the Jaywalker in it, and the circle and the cross. And the little bottle guy. And the point is, I know it's an illusion, but San Diego PD broke my arm, dislocated my shoulder, and shattered my elbow on one occasion. I also have gotten hit by a car and got my leg broken. And so the illusions in the that they're given in the book very much mark my life. I got fired from Kohl's and I got rehired at Kohl's. I ran the front line. So his story matches my story. And I find my life in the Big Book of Alcoholic Anonymous.
Me too.
And the power that I found through BBA in the first part that I'm going through. And I find that because I even changed my way of sharing when I share at meetings now. Like today was my first time leading again because I chose to start participating now in the way I'm supposed to because I'm 6 years old. As a first grader in school, we need to act like a first grader. So I was doing my service work, my commitment, and so I used my BBA book. Mm-hmm. And so I took one of the questions from my BBA book. Mm-hmm. Do I believe that the power can pull me back from the gates of death? And I read out of the doctor's opinion, and that's how we lead the meeting. And so that's how I lead my meeting. And so when I was forming my questions in my head, and I was like, no, I heard this in meetings, in AA meetings, but I said, well, Dee, you know what? You have people in BBA in the Southeast. That's where you're hearing BBA. And so I was like, oh, and I'm just so like, when you sensed me being so downcast, I was like, she knew there was something going on in my spirit. She knew. And I had so much going on in my spirit, but higher power has relieved that. And he solved everything right now. And I'm just so happy that I get to be free and that I'm with you guys. And now I can share. I get to share and I get to be happy in BBA, and nobody can make me be quiet. Like they were making me quiet in my home. And now I get to share and I get to hear you guys, and you guys don't have
great
to my ear. Great. Thank you for letting
thank
me.
You. Thank you, sweetheart. Marie, did you have shout out?
I did. Thank you, Tylan. Thanks so much. Oh my God. I just love what you just did. It was amazing. And you know, I was like the businessman that went to lunch and you know, had a glass of milk. I was in AA. I was 15 years sober. I thought I'd never drink again, and I thought it was my choice. And I had a great job. My son was doing well, good relationships with family, good relationships in the program. I got a great job. I started to travel, and I worked 12 to 14-hour days. And so I thought, I can skip while I'm here. I can, I don't have to do the spiritual stuff because I really don't have time. And so we started our first installation of software on this huge account. We got on the conference call, and my coworker, who was not on site, said that he told the CEO of Harris Entertainment that he had lied and not tested the software before we installed it. I was livid. I was embarrassed. And so that night, I thought I had let it all go. I took a client and two of my coworkers out to dinner. I bought them a round of some wine and a round of, you know, tequila. And this client said, no, you have to have one. And, you know, my coworker's like, she doesn't drink. I'm like, no, I don't drink. I'm not going to take it. And he just kept, and in my head, I believe the lie that you can take one shot of tequila tonight to shut this guy up and then just go to bed. And I took the shot. I was up all night drinking. I bought a pack of cigarettes. I hadn't smoked in 25 years. I drank all night, and I drank the whole rest of the time we were, you know, there, and every other trip after that. I eventually lost that job. And, you know, I had no desire to drink. I had no desire even after what had happened. But this guy who I thought was cute, and I wanted, you know, didn't want him to be mad at me. I was like, oh, just take the shot. And my, you know, I mean, that is pure insanity based upon what I lost.
Thank you, Marie.
And what I knew I was going to lose. Thanks, Tyler. Good.
Oh, thank you. Josie.
I think Wendy wanted to share first.
She's after you.
Okay. Throwing her on the bus. I'm Josie. I'm a crystal meth addict and alcoholic. Tyler, you did a great job every time. I never get tired of hearing you.
Thank you.
I've listened to you for years, and I can listen to you for 13 more.
I can listen to you for 13 more, but I think I'll be around longer.
I am sharing next week, and I do want more people to share. I'll just say a couple things. Just my favorite paragraph. In this part, there's a lot of stuff I like in this chapter. But on 34, it says, for those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent which he's already lost power to choose. This explains so much to me of why I was hearing people in the rooms just be able to just not drink no matter what and pull that off, you know, that they could just think it through. They could just do what they needed to do, and it worked for them, you know?
Play the tape.
They could play the tape, all the mental defenses that they were able to do that, mm-hmm. and I could not. And it was based on whether or not I lost the power to choice, is whether I need a spiritual way of life or not, a spiritual basis and a non-spiritual basis. And staying sober on a non-spiritual basis, to me, is just going to meetings and just saying no. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is not, it's not enlarging my spiritual life, you know? I know a lot of people can just stay sober on meetings. I could not do that. My experience here is so important to me, and what had happened to me, and not being able to stay sober and going to meetings and going to support groups and whatnot and going to treatment and not being able to get this and seeing people around me stay sober on these things. This paragraph spoke the loudest to me of why I cannot afford that. Why I need to know what's wrong with me, and seeing this truth behind what is really wrong with me. This is why I can't take for granted the prayer, the meditation, the amends, going out and finishing this stuff, working with others. The things that I do in this program is because I need a spiritual basis way of life, because what works for other people may not work for me. And this is where it's like, I'm not like other people. Even in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I may not be like others, okay? I might not like be like the person that's sitting next to me that can just do that. And my hat's off to him. And I don't need to argue anymore. I used to argue and tell people, no, that's not what the book says, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't fucking need to read their big book anymore. You know, your big book says my big book. it's the same words. We may read it differently, and that's up to you, you know? So I don't need to fight it as much, but I do want to point it out and bring it out, because some people are not awakened to that in the rooms, you know? And some people, like this BBA stuff, you know, I can look at, like when you're talking about the way I lie to myself, and I could see that. And I could see from the years I have sober, from my alcoholic ego, it's easy to look back and see the lies that I told myself. But when I'm in that, the scary thing is that when I'm in those lies and that the insanity is part of me, I can't do anything about it. And so me being awakened to that truth through this work is more to push me to seeing how powerless I really am and how insane I really am sober, and pushes me to a deeper need for God in my life and to see that I can't do this on my own. Because it's really easy to sit back in my alcoholic ego and just be like, oh yeah, da, 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 da. But when I'm in it and the insanity is back, I can't get out of it, you know? And this is where I need an act of God in my life. And I will say with the stories really quickly, just this last thing, I read these stories, and I was talking to Dylan before the meeting. I've never put whiskey in milk. That sounds fucking disgusting. Ew, gross. You know, I'm not going to do that. But I have told myself, maybe I'll eat a sandwich before I smoke meth so I won't get sketchy, you know? So like that makes sense to me, you know? So when you're going through these stories, you know,
yes,
relate it to your own experience, because
yes,
that's how I relate the sandwich story. So anyway, thanks for letting me share. And, have a good night.
Wendy. You're muted. Oh.
Yeah, I'm unmuted now. Hey, Tyla, what a great share tonight. Oh my goodness.
Thank you.
So amazing, as thank always. You. And everybody else's shares, and Joe, again, I loved yours tonight too. I have so many things that I could share about. One of them was, I guess, you know, I was 8 years sober, and my life was getting unmanageable. My husband was traveling all the time, and I had like little kids that I was taking care of, and I was working, and everything, our whole schedule was messed up, and I was so crazy, right? And the only thing I was really doing at that point leading up to that was going to meetings. So I quit going to meetings because I needed to get my kids, and I didn't have my husband to help me, and other people couldn't. And so it was kind of a crazy time in our life. And a lot of stuff happened, but bottom line, I was pretty miserable. And then I remember I left a place that I worked at for a long time, in a hair salon and a big day spa. And I went to a smaller one, and I was working there. And just out of the blue, this girl told me that she had to take a pain pill, right? Because she hurt her back, and her boyfriend gave it to her. And I was like, oh, I didn't plan on this. Okay. I was like, do you have another one? Right. And she gave me one, and I took it. And I can't tell you how I don't know how long it took before I was driving to a really seedy, scary place where her boyfriend lived in a really scary place in LA. And I was buying lots of drugs, like, you know, from him, painkillers and Xanax. And, you know, he was giving me tips on how to hide them so that if I got caught by the police leaving, it was like really crazy. And then, of course, then the drinking started, and it was just on, right? And here I have these little kids, and this was stuff I never thought I would do again. I had a lot of really good reasons not to drink and use, but I did it anyway, because the illusion. And then I'm laughing because I look at page 31, and it's, here's some of the methods that we have tried, right? I tried so hard to manage and control and enjoy my drinking and using. And I have to just say, I wasn't enjoying anything. I wasn't enjoying it because I didn't have a choice. It wasn't because I wanted to, it's because I had to, because I had a craving for something and an obsession for something that outweighed everything in my life that mattered to me the very most. And that's what I chose. Like, I didn't even choose it. That's just what I did. I didn't have power, choice, or control. All three were gone as soon as I, you know, asked for that pill. And I wasn't living on a spiritual basis. You know, just going to meetings wasn't enough. Meeting makers are not enough. Like, for me, I would hear that all the time. And I heard, and I used to think too, because, you know, when Joe talked about what other people can stay sober off of in meetings, and I really did stay sober, not doing a lot for a long time, but my life was pretty good. But as soon as it got unmanageable, it wasn't good. Okay. And, I would hear that some of the things that people said in meetings, and I would wonder how, you know, well, just think it through and all these things. And it's like, I kind of look back and I think maybe they were just heavy drinkers because, you know, I don't even know, but that thought kind of gets to me sometimes, like how many heavy drinkers are in AA or heavy users? And they're giving a really bad message that kills people because, you know, I really wanted to manage and control my drinking. I wanted to stop. I crossed the line. I couldn't stop. I had no choice, had no power, had no control. It's all I did in spite of the fact that I had a beautiful family and a lot to live for. And I'm just so grateful that I made it back. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing. Who would like to share? How about Robert? Would you like to share, honey?
Yeah, I can share. My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. You know, the paragraph here where it says, even if we're planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. You know, and I don't know, maybe I haven't looked at that closely enough as far as, do I still have something there that I'm not even willing to look at? That was something that I just started thinking about when you brought it up in the going through this. But after my first rehab, I mean, I got sober or was dry very conditionally. This had to happen. And if it didn't, then I was going to drink. And when things didn't go my way, that's exactly what happened. You know, I went and got drunk at her, you know, and if you saw the house I had to sell, you'd get drunk too. And, you know, I mean, it was just the lies. And I went out, you know, when it talks about some of us went out intentionally. But then after going through BBA and I get to this place, and I'd like to think that maybe I do have power, choice, and control again, you know, and maybe, I don't know. It's just a lot of questions are coming up in my head that you know, it's a good thing, but it's also difficult for me as well, because I'd like to, I don't know, I like to pretend that that's not there. Anyway,
well, like, do you think you could have two drinks a day, the same drinks, for a month?
No, and like when, if you ask me that question, I don't hesitate in my answer. I know that I couldn't. But that part of me that just slowly breaks me down, you know, that, and I'm not saying I feel like, you know, I'm not in a good place, but just realistically looking at my illness, okay, you know, am I being honest with myself?
Okay.
You know, when I go through this, am I really willing to look at that? You know?
Well, you know, you can ask Wendy to be harder on you.
No, I. Okay.
Thank you for sharing. That's great. Who would like to share?
Felicia, alcoholic.
Hi, Felicia.
I thank you for your great lead, Tyla, as always. And thanks for having us here. I was really just tuned into just a few different parts in here. One of the things you mentioned that I really can appreciate and attest to as well is that I can't pick up, there's things other than just even that first drink. I can't pick up anger. I can't pick up lying. I can't pick up stealing. I have learned those to be just as similar as the drink, that when I pick up those things, if I even entertain it in my mind, I'm on it, the obsession and compulsion begins. And I certainly have found that to be true. And learn a very hard way that those are, you know, with this thing we say the disease lies in our thinking. It is those things that I believe led me to the drink and will lead me right back to the drink. And so today it is that kind of stuff that I truly believe is why, you know, as you said, you know, a vigilant 10, 11 every day, 10, 11, 12 is so important. And continuing to enlarge my spiritual life, you know, you know, someone has said, it's like, do I have to do this to infinity? And I was like, well, we don't have to. We don't have to. But our big book tells us that that is my guard. That is my armor. That is my hedge of protection. That is what I understand this to be. And I want that protection between me and this spiritual warfare, between me and this spiritual enemy that wants to take me out, that wants to have me back the walking dead. All right. And so given that, I don't feel like I'll just walk out of here and stumble upon a drink. I feel like I'm kind of in that no matter what club. You know, I'm all right with that no matter what club, as long as I really keep that power, like right here, it's me and God, right? You're right here with me, right, God? You got this, right, God? Because see, I'm kind of clear about, no, not only have I admitted that I'm an alcoholic, I really feel like there's something that happened deep down on the inside of me. I realized I can't do life without God. I can't do life without God, because if I try, and when I try, I notice that that's when those thoughts come back. And that's when those thoughts, and if too many of those thoughts get to stacking up, then I can't sleep. And when I couldn't sleep once upon a time, that's when I thought I needed a little something to help me sleep. And remember, this is how my story started. And I just don't need that today. And so I have to be very clear with myself that, you know, one time it was an argument. I felt good and justified. I was like, God, you know, I've been a good girl. You know, I've been good. I've been like working my steps. I've been doing my thing. But, you know, this one here, she keep messing with me. This, And I say, I can handle it myself. Right, God? I can, you know, I was just justifying and rationalizing. And I went on and handled it myself. Do you know, I got spiritually butt whooped. Spiritually whooped for days, because it don't work like that. I don't get to take my will back. And that was like, that's when I learned it was like picking up the drink. Do you know, once I did, started with the texting and letting somebody know a little piece of my mind and who I am, and don't you know, oh my gosh, the obsession was on me, the compulsion was on me. It wasn't just one text, like I promised God, just let me give it to her one good time. I couldn't do one time. It kept going. Oh, I forgot to say something. One more. And that went on 3 days until I was physically ill. And then I needed God to pull me out of that emotional hangover and craziness. And so it's the same thing. And so my no matter what today is, I need God. I need God to handle those things and to fight for me, or just to bring me peace, or whatever it might look like. And that's why I think I'm going to stay. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Is there anyone that would like to share that has a burning desire? Anyone feel like they need to share before we close out? We can stay on a little longer if you guys want to stay on. Kylie, are you okay to stay on for 10?
Yeah, that's fine. I can pop out and leave it up too if we stay on long.
Okay. Well, Jessica, would you like to share?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, everyone. Jessica, alcoholic. I know I shared a few weeks ago and had said that it had been so long since I'd been involved in the meetings, and I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic. That has now been smashed by this work. Clearly I am. And thank you so much, Mama Bear, for your share. I'm just so thankful to be going through this work with you and Joe. You know, I had written in my 10 most insane in the questions, and I realized that two of them, I was thinking of two recent, like, most insane things that I did previously, and realized I actually hadn't been drinking during those times, but I had gone into treatment, and because of being so depressed and anxious, I just was kind of living in the house doing nothing and had no program. And so I see that insanity and the mental obsession of just my nature without a spiritual program.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing my best to try to relate. Thank you for saying that you write sober at the end of some of the sentences, Mama Bear, because I want to see like there's in parts that I'm different or maybe that I'm not, like the question of where did it go? Can I stay stopped? Oh, I can't find it. Could I leave liquor or drugs alone? Okay. Could I leave liquor or drugs alone for 1 year on my own without a program? Mm-hmm. Well, I've had the longest I've ever had sober. I have about 5.5 years, three of which I've not been really in the program, some 10 and 11, but really work is all that I've done. And so I wanted to see, well, yes, I suppose I've been sober. Is that because, you know, because I had such a profound experience when I went through the work the first time? Is it because, you know, is it that I'm afraid of alcohol and don't want to drink? But I'm also looking at the quality of my life in these last 3 years. And it's, I would say that there is a lot of my life that I'm living like I need a drink or Klonopin, which I'm a pill addict. And that's why I'm in this work that's what I'm looking for. You know, I want to live that life of, you know, of peace and, not be a little tornado. So this has been such a profound experience so far. And I'm just really grateful to be here.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you. We're going to wrap it up. Thank you, everyone, for sharing. Joe, do you have anything to say about next week?
No. See y'all next week.
There's the 10 craziest things we've ever done under the influence.
Yeah.
Right, Joe?
Yes.
So
it's in the questions. Yeah.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Okay. So do I have any announcements? There is a weekend coming up on the 16th, 17th, and 18th. Is that what it is, Joe?
Yes.
It's a awakening weekend out of Chula Vista. Rachel's speaking, I'm speaking, Nathan Jones is speaking. It's Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday morning, and we will have the info is up on Facebook, PBA Facebook. And if anyone has any questions I can help them with, please feel free to call. And Kylie and Jan, thank you for hosting this. Rachel, thank you for helping. And all of you, thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And we need someone to take us out in the serenity prayer. Kimberly, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to do the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yay, God.